Okay, everybody.
You know, it's coming along, trying to basically finish out the school year strong, not doing the best at it, but just one more day of classes.
Or so tomorrow, and then you've got long Memorial Day weekend, right?
Yep, and then it's just like some admin stuff, getting ready for graduation the next week.
Okay, and are you doing anything fun with Memorial Day weekend?
I got a buddy coming into town. We're gonna go to the zoo.
Nice.
This the Denver Zoo.
The Denver Zoo.
And is that a nice zoo?
You know, I've actually never been. I've been out here 8 years, and I've never been to the Denver Zoo.
But we have a zoo in Minneapolis, and it's mostly just different kinds of elk and other antler deer type animals. It's mostly disappointing. The only sadder zoo I've been to is the one in Beijing, where it's just pandas in concrete cages.
You know, good name for a band. Pandas in concrete cages.
Pandas
in I like that.
My cover band is trying to think of names right now. So if you guys have any good names, you know, be sure to let me know. Okay. The lead singer is Beth. So I was thinking like Beth and the Booty Shakers or Beth and the Bees or something like that. So I'm big on alliteration. So, okay, well, this sounds like you got kind of a good late spring, early summer kind of starting up. Gideon, how's it going this week, man?
It's good, man. Been a little busy, but, you know, just been getting things done, different chores, taking care of different things around the house. Did watch a couple horror movies recently. I saw the new Final Destination, which was awesome.
And Bloodlines
Bloodlines. Okay. Which this is a series like similar to like Saw, where I was just like too afraid and just like avoided my whole life. But this one was really fun. So I'm definitely gonna go back and watch the other ones. And I would recommend that one. And I watched Wes Craven's The People Under the Stairs, which was very weird. And pretty scary and just like strange early 90s horror stuff.
Are you otherwise into Wes Craven, like Nightmare and The Hills Have Eyes?
I haven't seen those. Do you mean Nightmare on Elm Street?
Yeah.
I haven't seen that yet, but I did see Scream semi-recently.
Right.
And I did really like that, so I want to check out more of his stuff. I really want to get to Nightmare on Elm Street. And other than that, I've been... You know, grinding out Fortnite. I got my Dark Charizard.
Okay, good.
Dude, almost done with the Battle Pass. I got like 6 levels and I'm done. So very excited to be done. I'm so happy to have Dark Charizard. I feel like I'm one of the elite Fortnite players now. I feel like I could go pro when I put that skin on.
Yeah, that's I know exactly the feeling. You buy an expensive cosmetic and you're like, I'm the dog's bollocks, I am.
other than, you know, brain rotting on Fortnite, I've been reading The Long Halloween. I'm almost done. I think I'm on like chapter 9. And I've been reading Saga. I'm on chapter 13 right now.
Saga is interesting.
Have you read it, Neil?
I don't know how many volumes I made it in, but I got a good chunk and a friend of mine loaned them to me.
Okay, nice. It is so much better than I expected. I'm loving it. And I just got the hardcover book.
What is Saga?
It's an indie comics. It's like sci-fi fantasy, started in 2012 from Image Comics. It's like really popular. It's by Brian K. Vaughan, who did Why the Last Man. And I forget the artist's name. It's Fiona something. But it's like really, really popular, really lauded. Just like sci-fi.
I've definitely heard Saga before, so
I would recommend it. It's awesome from what I've read.
I got to check into that. I'm trying to get Grace into Fables, which is the
Bill Bellingham.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know if I bought her one of those or
I picked up Volume 1 at a thrift store for like $2 like a month ago. So
Sam,
I played The Wolf Among Us,
right?
Because that's Fables.
Sam, if you'd like, I can bring out like the first 12 volumes when I come see you guys.
I gotta check. I think I like bought Grace Fables Volume 1 as like a nice little treat, and then I don't think she ever like read it or got into it or whatever. So let me just double check. I think I might have gotten her that for like a birthday or Christmas at some point. So I'll have my people talk to your people. We can figure that out. So you're doing Fortnite. Have you touched Doom at all? Dark Age?
Oh, yeah. I did. I'm like really close. I'm probably like less than 2 hours from beating the DLC on Eternal. But I did jump in and play like the first 3 chapters or something on Dark Ages. But I put it down for now. I'll come back to it.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I have been watching, I've been watching a shit ton of South Park lately. And it's been awesome, dude. It's so good.
From the beginning?
Kind of. Like, I have, like, the Blu-ray set for season, like, 1 through 5. And we'll probably eventually, like, do it sequentially. But we've just been, like, jumping around. Because they recently announced, I think it's going to move in July to Paramount Plus, and they're going to pull, like, 12 episodes or something that are getting censored.
Right.
Yeah, and yeah. So we've been watching those. And just trying to watch the ones that are like going to get cut out, basically.
Yeah, you know, South Park is, I almost don't want to compare it to King of the Hill, because like King of the Hill is so good natured and good hearted, but like South Park is one of those shows where like sometimes if I'm like kind of split on a political issue, I watch South Park and then they do an episode about it and I'm like, oh yeah, that's probably how I should feel about that. Like they have a very smart, sharp sense of humor and like a really good sense of right and wrong, which isn't always the first thing that you think about when you think of South Park. You just think of like the crassness of it and like how over the top it is. But it is a show with a lot of heart, and I can appreciate that about it.
Yeah, and it's really making me want to go back and platinum Stick of Truth.
Yeah.
And play, I never played the sequel, the Fractured Butthole.
Grace played and loved both of those games.
Okay. Have you played the second one?
I just played the first one. I remember it was like the last game I played at my parents' house before I moved away to college.
Wow. Okay.
Because it came out like summer of 2012 or 13. maybe it was my last summer living at home between years of college that I played. You know, it was like summer of 2013 or something like that.
Right.
It was like that and Mass Effect 3, and then I was like, I bounced out of there.
Nice.
But that was my last memory of living with my parents, just playing the end of Mass Effect 3 and being like, fuck this, and then like,
yeah. Oh my god. Fucking bullshit.
Neil, have you been playing anything besides Helldivers?
Mostly Helldivers. I did have fun session with our friend Jesse playing Deep Rock Galactic this past weekend.
Yep, nice. Yep. I accidentally dropped in on that, so I remember that.
But it occurs to me now that I went through the pain of upgrading my graphics card a few months ago. I should probably knock out a couple of games that aren't, you know, perpetual grinds and
brain rot games.
I wouldn't say brain rot games, but maybe it's time to finally beat Doom 2016.
Nice, dude. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
So worth it.
That's
put on the headphones, crank up the volume. You're set.
Yeah, dude. And it runs on, I mean, not that you have if you've got a new graphics card, I'm sure it's going to run awesome, but Doom 2016 runs on fucking everything. That game is incredible.
It didn't run great on my previous graphics card, so.
Mm. Well, that is unfortunate, but any new card should do your write-up. Let's see, what have I been doing? God, I feel like mostly working. I was at a cabin this last weekend. I didn't do shit for 3 days, so I lost some time there. That was like right when Doom came out. So I'm like halfway through Doom the Dark Age right now. It's fine. It's like I would like want to reserve judgment until I like get all the way through it. But for me right now, it's like I feel like about the Doom trilogy exactly how I feel about Star Wars, where it's like Doom 2016, Doom Eternal, Doom the Dark Age, right? So it's like, you know, New Hope, Empire, and then Jedi is like a little bit of a step down. That's exactly how I feel about the Dark Age right now. But we'll get into that. Once you play more, we can talk about what we like and don't like about it.
Yeah, I definitely want to play more.
Yeah. So that's basically what I've been up to. I'm taking hopefully a really long motorcycle trip this upcoming Memorial Day weekend if the weather's nice. I already talked to Kit about that. Mm-hmm. You know, I won't bore you with the details. And otherwise, things have been pretty much fine. So I'm going to do something new for the podcast this week. Sure. For the intro, I'm basically going to, like, I have like a kind of a 3-paragraph like summary that we can do, and then we can talk, hop into talking about the movie. Mm-hmm. Sound good? Okay. So I think I'm going to like actually cut this out and put this at the very beginning or something like that. And then we'll pick up the discussion after this. So I'm just going to read this. Stop Making Sense is a concert film directed by Jonathan Demme, the man who would later deliver one of the strongest movies of the 90s in Silence of the Lambs. It features new wave band Talking Heads at the height of their powers during a 4-night residency in Los Angeles in 1983. Band leader David Byrne, equal parts Bill Nye, Pentecostal Firebrand, and George Clinton of Parliament Funkadelic, is the star of the show, both as lead vocalist and primary creative vision behind the stage production. Indeed, Byrne infects a rock show with performance art, iconic choreography, and visual flair a la Andy Warhol and the Velvet Underground. What starts as a one-man show starring Byrne quickly grows to envelop all of the core members of Talking Heads, and within a few more numbers, the group has expanded to an all-star cast of multi-ethnic, jet-fuel-driven musicians. The film has received a recent 4K release from acclaimed production company A24. So, with that said, we'll get into the movie proper. This week, we decided to talk about... Well, I decided we were going to talk about the 1983 concert movie Stop Making Sense, which features Talking Heads, one of the great new wave bands of the early 80s. So before we start talking about the movie, I want to set the stage and talk a little bit about Talking Heads and get your guys' background and what you know going into it and that sort of thing. So Neil, I know you are a fan of music of this era, but I don't think I really know much about your relationship with Talking Heads or David Byrne or any of that. So why don't you tell me kind of what you knew going into the movie?
This was basically a blind watch for me in a lot of ways. I'm familiar with Talking Heads, but like, I wouldn't say I'm a fan, not because I don't like them, but I just, you know, they have a pretty expansive range of work, and I'm just kind of familiar with like probably their greatest hits, which this concert is kind of an example of. I think it's kind of like a greatest hits compilation of like their first 4 albums. But I do have a really special place in my heart for This Must Be the Place. And I've listened to a bit of David Byrne's other stuff. He did a collaboration with St. Vincent that I really enjoyed back in college. But other than that, you know, I'm just kind of familiar with, you know, some of the memes, you know, the oversized suit. But I really didn't know too much about this going in. I will say, when we were discussing this, I was kind of, I had some trepidation about us doing a concert film for this podcast, which we'll get into later. But that kind of sums up my thoughts and feelings, I think.
Absolutely. And Gideon, what was your background with Talking Heads before you watched Stop Making Sense?
Yeah, similar to Neil's, I, you know, kind of vaguely know some of their hits. I've never listened to any of their music on my own, but I've, you know, heard some in other media or stuff like that. I think I know that song that he Neil mentioned about with St. Vincent, with David Byrne. Is it I Think I Should Watch TV or something like that? And I'd heard about this or the 4K like 40th anniversary by A24, and I saw I got a theatrical re-release. And people seem pretty excited about it. I heard that how like you mentioned, this is like one of the greatest concert films of all time. And I'd seen like little snippets here and there, maybe like from the trailer. So I'd always been curious about this, but yeah, I'm not super familiar with Talking Heads on a personal level, other than just kind of referential or like through other media and stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah, you see a lot of like, especially in like Letterboxd and like film circles and film Twitter, you hear a lot about like, you know, David Byrne and David Lynch are like two of the iconic quirked up white boys of the internet age, you know, so it's like our two favorite autistic Davids, things like that. My first exposure was Psycho Killer being in Rock Band.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I remember playing that song and being like, what the hell is this? This is like the weirdest shit. And he's like singing in French and like the weird, like the weird screaming and stuff. And he has such like a strange, interesting voice.
That's what I felt like while watching it. I was like, you know, I'm not super familiar with their work, but I'm like, yeah. I don't really know how I would describe this music to someone.
Right.
If they were like, okay, right. Tell me, like, they're deaf or something, right? What it sounds like.
Yeah, it is very different, but I think that's so. Let me give you like my whole take on Talking Heads first, which I was about the same as you guys were going into this. Like, you know, I was familiar with like Life During Wartime and Once in a Lifetime and Psycho Killer and Burning Down the House, like most of like the big songs that are in this movie. Mm-hmm. Actually, colloquially, I knew the song that's like, like I knew that one. I didn't know what it was called, though, because all they do in that song is like just scream, you know, so it's what the hell is the name of this? It turns out it's called Swamp. And I knew about like the big suit and all the iconography from this, I suppose. I'm actually much more familiar with the other bands that were around at the same time as Talking Heads. So Talking Heads are from New York. Some of the other bands that like they were playing a lot of early shows with were like Blondie and Television and Ramones and other early like punk new wave kind of bands from the late 70s. I'm way more familiar with all their stuff than I was with Talking Heads. And I was actually really surprised to find out that Talking Heads were part of like the New York City punk scene, because they seem so much more clean cut than that. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, that is the one thing that, aside from the movie itself, that really stands out to me about this band is they are so unique in their time. I mean, the early 80s is like the peak of hair metal, right? And like dudes dressed like chicks and every song's about either the lead singer's dick or what drugs they did last night. And Talking Heads is like so far away from all of that.
Mm-hmm. It feels like it's on its own like planet or something. And like, yeah, it does feel like clean cut. Like, it's like they are really weird, but it doesn't look like they're doing drugs weird. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, very eclectic stuff.
You know, like everybody, I think you're related to this, Gideon. Like, everybody always says, like, Weezer, if you like saw those guys on the street, you would think they're like in your IT department, not like in a rock band. That's how I feel about Talking Heads. I'm like, these guys are the IT guys at like my last job. They're not like, you know, rock stars, as it were. I think if I was in high school in 1982, I would have been insufferable about this band. You know, partly because, I think that speaks more about me and how insufferable I would have been as a person, as and not really that much about the band. So let me look it up here. Oh, and do we have any other concert films you guys have seen to compare this to?
I don't know if this totally counts. Back in high school, I remember some friends were really into This Is Spinal Tap. I remember playing in the background at some parties, but I remember some scenes, but I never like watched it. So it's on my list of things that maybe we'll do in the future.
Yeah.
I don't know too many concert films that I've seen. God, there was one I watched on Hulu a couple of years ago. That was about like a music festival, I think in like the Bronx, and like it was like the same year or like right around when Woodstock happened. Mm-hmm. I think it was like a jazz and like soul festival. I'm forgetting the name, but
was it Altamont?
No.
Okay.
I'll do some digging and look for it, because I think Questlove like he helped produce it or something like that. But that was really, really excellent. I don't know if I've seen too many or too many I would like really count, like, you know, because we're not counting like biopics and stuff, right? Like,
right. Yeah.
Bohemian Rhapsody. Yeah. Like, and even like something like Daft Punk's 2007 Alive thing, like
that kind of counts, I guess.
Is that kind of like, or is that just like a lot of people kind of like filming it? You know, is it like, is it really a concert film in that way?
I understand. You know? Well, so that's something I definitely want to. We'll get into this later, but what I was expecting out of this was more like, you know, some guy set up a camera and filmed a concert of Talking Heads, and that is kind of what it is, but it's more than that.
Like, right.
That's what I really thought was. So I had seen individual song, like YouTube clips from this movie, like Girlfriend Is Better with the big suit and everything, or Life During Wartime, where they're doing like all the jogging and all that shit. I was blown away at like the film construction. Like, this is a directed movie.
Right. That's what, like, I mean, is like
that has a beginning, middle, and an end. Mm-hmm. That was super cool. Sorry, go ahead.
You're good. Sorry. I mean, yeah, like it feels so much more an actual production in the film sense. But making their live performance and their concert into a film, or translating it to film, and being able to keep and even expand on like the intimacy of their performances and stuff, which I feel like I haven't seen any concert film to this level before.
Right.
So I could see why it's lauded to that degree in that sense.
Yeah, Neil, any thoughts on that?
So, yeah, I guess I really did appreciate that this movie is, in some ways, very simple. Like, I feel like a lot of other concert movies, like, will cut away and, like, they'll have, like, interviews with the band and, like, them show or what have you. And this is just, like, you know, it's more than this, but it's a recording of the performance, and that's all it really sets out to be. And I'm not saying that the other way is wrong, but I do appreciate just like how simple the approach is.
Are either of you familiar with the concert movie, the Led Zeppelin one? It's called The Song Remains the Same. Okay, so that particular movie is, I mean, it is ostensibly a concert film from the early 70s, but every member of the band got their own, like, song that they got to insert, like, a vanity project into. Like, everybody said, like, this is the song that represents me, and then they went out and shot, like, basically, like, a fantasy music video of that person, like, embodying the character in that song. So, like, Robert Plant, the lead singer, he picks the song. The song is called "The Song Remains the Same," and it's like him on a horse, and he's got like chainmail and a fucking giant claymore and shit, like riding off to like save the princess. And Jimmy Page, like the guitar player, his whole thing is like this big acid trip where he's got like crazy demon eyes, and like it's weird. It's really out there. This, I agree, takes a much better. Like that stuff in The Song Remains the Same is like totally unwatchable to me, and this takes a much simpler, but I think effective approach. Like I think it is simple, but I think the ultimate thing I took away from it is Talking Heads are so visually interesting and artistic. Anyway, this was the perfect band to do a concert movie about. Like the pairing of the band and the director, I think works incredibly well because they're such a like artsy. We're gonna have the big suit. We're gonna have all these words popping up in the background. It just says video games or dog food or whatever. Mm. We're gonna have everybody in color coded outfits in this, except for the drummer who's wearing like an aqua golf shirt for some reason. Yeah. It's like
So funny.
Yeah, it was weird.
I love it.
Yeah. So I guess what we should, we usually do like 10,000 foot thoughts, which I know is like harder to do for more of a non-narrative movie, but 10,000 foot thoughts, you guys enjoyed yourself? You have a good, set the scene for me. Did you watch this with nice speakers, with good headphones? What were you eating? What were you drinking? Set the scene for me, guys.
Let's see. For me, you know, watched it late at night. That was nice. Just chilling. I had nice little sparkling water.
Did Alyssa watch it?
She like watched some of it, but she was like doing other things too. So she was kind of in and out. And she likes the Talking Heads from, you know, what she's heard, kind of like hits and stuff too. And I had the subwoofer going, cranked with the sound bar, and just really just trying to immerse myself in the like being a, you know, in the concert with the audience. And yeah, just kind of let it flow over me, and I enjoyed it. And you know, I feel like my enjoyment is like going to be at its lowest now, and it's going to like, I'm going to grow an appreciation of this movie over time as I, you know, if I get more familiar with Talking Heads and just like revisiting it. And I really do appreciate kind of like what you were talking about with the director. It's like, you know, it's like really good editing where it's like invisible. You don't notice it, and it just, it gets out of the way. So you're totally just in whatever the subject matter is. And I do like the simplicity of like even him just starting with like the boombox and the acoustic guitar, and just like playing that, and then how it like builds, and I'm like, damn, they got a lot of people in this band and like a lot of different instruments, and just seeing where it goes, and then like the kind of mesmerizing, this movie felt like hypnotic, like with a lot of things, like not just the rhythms and the flow and pacing of it, but like the weird dance moves, the random iconic big suit, like him doing that thing with his knees, you know, like, and then he's got like the backup singers and everything, and yeah, even the blue polo on the drummer is great. And I'm definitely keen to pick up the A24 4K at some point. Yeah.
Neil, how about you? 10,000 foot thoughts. You know, were you booping and bopping along with rubber inflatable wailing tube man David Byrne?
So first off, I mentioned before that I had some trepidation about us doing this, because I just feel like it's too different from anything else that we've reviewed. Like I feel like it's just really an apples to oranges situation, where like, yes, it was filmed, but it's not a film per se. Like,
right.
You know, it's a recording of a stage production. And then on top of that, you know, like, you know, it's not like a recording of a play. You know, there isn't a plot. There aren't characters. And even like, you know, like camera angles and cinematography are limited just based on the way that a live performance works, right?
Yes. So,
you know, it is just very different. And I'm not totally convinced that we should rate it the same way. But regardless of like where we come down with ratings at the end of this, this is like, to me, the hardest or easiest recommend for somebody based on whether or not they actually like Talking Heads, right? Like, we've mentioned before in some movies, like, I'm not a huge horror movie fan, but some horror movies are just like so good that you have to give them a shot.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, they'll break through my aversion towards them.
Like Evil Dead 2013.
Yeah, Exactly. Yeah. But this one is, it was tough for me, in some ways, because I knew maybe, if I'm being generous to myself, like half of the songs here.
Right.
And so on the one hand, that made the moments where like, oh, I know this one. And like, you know, when they came on with "This Must Be the Place," I was like, oh, that's, I'm glad they're doing that. But other songs on there just like weren't iconic to me. And I wound up enjoying some of them, but others were just like, it didn't capture it for me in the same way that I feel like if you were a big fan, like, oh my God, you know, they're doing a greatest hits. But if you don't know half the greatest hits, you know, it's a first time listener, sometimes it's just not going to resonate with you.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're somebody who like doesn't know anything about Talking Heads, I feel like you would get, I feel like people have like the potential to just be very bored by this.
Right.
Yeah, and I sort of understand that a little bit. Go ahead, Gideon.
I was just going to say, and I feel like, you know, even for people that are like music fans or music lovers and like discovering new music, which, you know, I would consider for myself, but it's like, I feel like it can be hard to get on the band's wavelength and even kind of really understand like what's going on or what they're trying to achieve or just like getting in the groove with them, I guess. But yeah, definitely a "Your Mileage May Vary" type of movie.
Yeah, I think it's logical to say like, hey, this is ultimately a concert film, and if you don't like the band that the concert film is portraying, then obviously like there's no amount of camera work or cinematography that is like going to get you into this. Yeah, that said, I think I agree with you, Neil. It's like the strongest version of that particular thing. You know, it's like there's some people that are not into eating raw fish, but this is like a 5-star sushi restaurant.
Right.
If you know, if you are into eating the raw fish, definitely. I totally understand that. And by the way, I think like we can totally skip giving it a rating at the end, because I do agree with you. Like it's very hard to be like, you know, Speed Racer is a 3, but Stop Making Sense is a 4. You know what I mean? It's just like, it doesn't really make sense in the context of like giving it a rating.
Even like a 2 versus a 4 in this movie, I don't know how you'd explain the difference.
Right. All I know is that during the songs, I knew I was like cranking it. Like my sound system is like unlistenably loud on like 30, and I was cranking it to like 40 on like Burning Down the House and Life During Wartime. And even the songs I didn't know, I was like, I'm a fan of this song now. Like.
Mm-hmm.
By a couple minutes into it, I was like, this is every song on here is pretty awesome, except for I thought the song that was Jerry Harrison and Tina Weymouth without David Byrne, it's like 3/4 of the way into the movie, and it's a song where like David Byrne's just not there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, where is he? Where's my guy at?
Okay.
That song is like whatever, you know.
I believe the two of them were at the very least at the time married. I think they might still be together.
They're still married, yeah.
And they have a side project called the Tom Toms. And that's where that song comes from.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's interesting. Yeah, they have that little side song in there that was like, it was fine, but it wasn't up to the standard of the other, like the huge, like there are some. I almost said there are some songs in this that really bring down the house. Ha ha ha. That's not what I meant. But like, there are some songs in this movie that are like explosively entertaining to watch. Mm-hmm. And I think Giddy brought up a really good point earlier. Like I wouldn't describe it as choreography, but it is. I mean, like David Byrne's planned out skits on stage, like with the lamp is really
the
good.
The lamp was probably my favorite. Even him running like a track.
Yeah.
Like I swear I thought he was gonna trip at one point, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, and even just thinking about, you know, I've been on stages for, you know, different school plays or whatever, it's like there's tons of shit you could trip on, especially with all the cables and instruments and everything. Yeah.
Or them jogging in place for Life During Wartime. Oh my god damn, there's so much coke on the stage here.
They have a weird relationship with choreography. So apparently for the Once in a Lifetime music video, which like doesn't like you look at it and like, you know, this is clearly like early music video era, but apparently the choreography was done by Tony Basil, who is like a world-class choreographer, and but is more known for doing the "Oh Mickey, you're so fine, you're so" that song. Like, yeah. she's not like a professional singer, but like she wound up singing that song because they couldn't find somebody else to do it. But choreography for Once in a Lifetime. I wouldn't be surprised if she like collaborated on this on some level too.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
I think one of the most interesting aspects of the movie to me was how it started with just David Byrne with the tape recorder and the guitar, and then it grew with one new member for each song until it was like the full band. And then they played like a really early Talking Heads song with the four of them, and then they expanded it to the multi-ethnic group of session musicians. I don't know if anybody else experienced this during this movie, but did anybody else feel like racism was over during Stop Making Sense? I was like, this is,
it's a soul healing movie. Yeah. Like, yeah, even if I don't fully click or understand with it all the entire runtime, I still really appreciate having a concert filmed in this intimate detail, especially with such a lively, energetic performance like this.
Yeah.
Which, and if I was to try and describe the music simply, I'd say it's like easy listening music, you know? It's not like a hardcore metal show or some techno shit or, you know, it's like you, most people could probably find some fun in this.
It's feel good.
I do have a sidebar. I found that movie I was talking about, the concert film.
Yeah, what is it?
It's called Summer of Soul. Questlove was the director. Came out 2021. Yeah. Hulu original. That is excellent. I would recommend people watch that. What's really cool is, so it was in 1969, the Harlem Cultural Festival, and it was almost like lost media because somebody had filmed it, and it was like huge. But then I think like Woodstock overshadowed it, or it was like right around there or something. And then like the film reel like just sat in somebody's like house for like years and years. So I love that element. I just wanted to shout it out. But yeah.
Yeah, that is cool. Oh, geez, let me pull up my notes here. What else do I got?
Oh, I like how the ending, I'm pretty sure it loops back to the first song, right? With him and the boombox. Like, I feel like they use that boombox, like, beat in the end credits.
Yeah.
I could be wrong, but I think they do.
Well, yeah, it's like similar, and there's no way that they didn't. You think of David Byrne as being a pretty detail oriented guy, like who clearly had the thought of like, it's gonna be just me, and then it'll be me and Tina, and then it'll be we add Jerry Harrison, then we get the drummer out, and it's like this big crescendo party until the last number of this song. Is like, they might as well just like fucking shoot fireworks off at the end. I mean, it's like so joyous and so jubilant.
I like that it plays that first track again, because it's like it lends itself to like looping it, repeating it back in on itself, you know?
Yeah, there's something very like, one review I was looking at other people's reviews of this movie, and somebody said that like this would be a good thing to put on a spacecraft, like if we had to like make contact with aliens, as an example of like this is like the kind of jubilation that like music can bring to like large groups of people. It's like this like masterful like work of self-expression, and like there's something to be said about like, you know, a 15-minute long sad Bob Dylan song about dying, but there's also something to be said about like a bunch of quirked up white boys like who figured out how to make like this weird funk music in the early 80s and like got this multicultural band together, and it just seems like everything's gonna be okay when you're watching
And
I'm so pissed that I didn't, this was recently shown in IMAX.
Oh, damn. Yeah, that would be awesome.
Yeah. Imagine how big that suit would be in IMAX. Oh, I remember what I was going to ask. What was your guys' favorite outfit?
I mean, it's got to be the big suit, but excluding that, the basis. Is that his wife?
Not David Byrne's wife, but it's like the other guitar player.
The main female bassist, whoever that was. I don't know if it maybe it was a different guitar, but she was great. I loved her outfit. Yeah.
That's Tina Weymouth.
Okay.
She is one of the, in my opinion, one and everybody else's opinion, one of the all-time great bass players, and she's just phenomenal. She's so good. Neil, favorite outfit, favorite visual aspect?
You know, I think that like the energy on stage was just great. So like early on when they're doing like burning down the house and David Byrne is just sweating to death, but you know, just going as hard as he possibly can. And there's still an hour left. Like,
yeah.
I agree. Like it is hard to not get a little caught up in just like,
yeah.
It doesn't seem like they're being happy performatively. I feel like everybody on stage is having a good time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And like, not to say like what they're doing isn't difficult or like, you know, there isn't technical skill involved, but sometimes you watch like Metallica concerts or whatever, or clips from them. And like, you know, Kirk Hammett is like, you know, destroying it on guitar, but is he having fun being as good as he is, or is he, you know, just showing off a skill? And I think that there's like this happy medium where like, you know, you're showing off that you're doing something difficult or cool, but you're also enjoying showing it rather than like, I don't watch ballet, but like, I feel like the real superstars of ballet, like, are able to like show that they're enjoying themselves while they do this like incredibly hard and technical dance routine. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's what makes them a superstar over somebody who just has like the technical skill.
Yeah, so, there's something about the joyous expression going on here that's it's infectious. It's very hard not to get caught up in like, God, this is such a horrible thing to say, but here we go anyway, I guess. sometimes like, do you guys ever have the reaction of like watching somebody really, really autistic and you like it makes you uncomfortable because they don't know how autistic they are?
Don't make us call you out this way.
Yeah, well, I have 934 games of Nature's Prophet on Dota 2, everybody. Isn't this really interesting?
Oh, that's funny. I don't know. I guess like, that almost makes me think of like cringe humor shows and stuff. But I don't know. I guess I don't know.
Well, my point is that David Byrne is like Mr. King of the autists, and I don't feel uncomfortable watching him in this movie. I'm just like, This guy rocks.
He's vibing out, dude. Like he is like strange, awkward, lanky alien man with a lot of crazy ass dance moves, and he's stimming like so hard in this movie, but he's doing it and leaning into it for his own benefit, and it's just working like so well for him. Like, he's mastered it. Yeah,
dude, I don't remember what song it was, but it was after Girlfriend is Better, so it was like, it's like he still has the bottom half of the big suit on but not the top half, and he has this like little red hat. And he's just like, the bottom half of him looks huge, and he's just like bopping around in that fucking stupid looking. Yeah. I mean, he was like one step away from having like a little spinny propeller hat on.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you mentioned the red hat, because I was like, I kind of hate watching this with the modern lens, and all I can think about is like President Trump. I'm like, the MAGA hat. I'm just oh my God. Like, it's just a red hat. Like, what the fuck?
Now that you say that, that is what that reminded me of. It reminded me of like, you
know, it looks like the same
Trump. It looks like, you know, Trump is very bottom heavy, and it reminds you of like seeing pictures of him out on a golf course with the red hat and the white shirt and then like the fat pants. Right, like that's exactly what that reminds me of. Now that you mentioned that, So yeah. So we are coming up on just about an hour.
Okay.
Flew by, just like Stop Making Sense. Now obviously we're not gonna give it any ratings, but does anybody wanna say their final piece or maybe we should say a favorite number or a favorite song from the
What's the one where it's like didn't
that's Burning Down the House.
Yeah, that one definitely.
Yeah, that's mine too.
Yeah, that was good.
You're
shit.
Get what you're after. No, baby. How about you, Neil?
Like I said, This Must Be the Place is a very special song to me. So, like, I did have like the, oh, they're actually going to do it reaction when it came on. So I was very happy.
Did you do the point thing where you're like,
almost
the soy face?
I do want to say a quick runner up, Weird Connection.
Mm-hmm.
Psycho Killer, they did like a acoustic version of that. I'm more familiar with like the more produced version, I guess. Because it comes up on my like YouTube algorithm when I'm like putting on like Beastie Boys for some reason, which the music video, like it's not a music video per se, it's the song over clips from a movie called My Friend Dahmer, about Jeffrey Dahmer, which stars a young actor from my favorite Disney Channel original movie.
What movie?
Is it Luck of the Irish?
No, I've never heard of that before.
Smart House?
Like
Smart House, dude.
Watch it at some point because it's super charming because like it's made for no budget, even for a Disney movie. Teen Beach Movie from 2013.
Teen Beach Movie?
I think I'm on a list for mentioning it now, but it's like this wonderful example of like I think the people who made it really, really loved it as they made it because again, they're supposed to be like on a island that you can see like a resort off in the distance. and they just don't acknowledge it.
That's awesome.
I just think it's wonderful, like in a way where it's like got a lot of heart. They're doing a lot with a very little. And it's also clever. It's got some sci-fi elements, I guess, that are just kind of interesting.
Really? Okay. How did you find this movie, Neil? That's what I want to know. Or how did the movie find you?
My friend Kyle made us watch it at some point.
Okay.
Neil was Googling teen beach movie, and that's just what came up, and he just was like, well, I might as well. We should do a Disney Channel original movie episode.
We could do Xenon the Sequel.
Dude, yes. Well, we'd have to start
with Xenon. We got to do the whole series. It's like Hunger Games.
You know what? You don't want to do it out of order and risk like no, ruining no, no, the no, war no. or anything.
It's like, it'd be like watching Endgame and then Infinity War, right?
Yeah,
we should.
Grace and I were talking about DComs earlier because she was really into the Cheetah Girls, and obviously I was a little too old and had a penis, so I wasn't as into that. But I was into Smart House, and my brother really liked Eddie's Million Dollar Cook-Off.
Mm. I'll have to look. I'm gonna look up some because I definitely watched the shit.
Might have to watch the Shia LaBeouf original Holes.
Oh my god, yeah. I love
that is a great Sky High, is a great dude. Book. Sky High. Yeah. Mary Elizabeth Winstead's in that and Kurt Russell. We love Kurt Russell on this podcast. who's the patron like saint actor of this podcast? Is it we gotta like find the
Ooh,
person that's
I would there. Think it would be right now placeholder Nick Cage, probably.
Yeah, we like, watched Vampires just because Camp. Of yeah, because of Nick
and
Cage.
Mandy and, yeah.
Might still be David Lynch.
Yeah.
R.I.P. We've done more Nick Cage movies than David Lynch movies, though.
Probably.
Although we double up for Wild at Heart, which, God, that movie was bad. But anyway.
I want to rewatch it because the stream so bad, I watched it looked I'm like shit. For recording.
Yeah. I feel I haven't lost a recording in a while. Knock on wood. Okay, guys. Well, anybody have any interesting plans for the rest of their night?
No, I'm just going to try and finish reading this saga book. I'm on chapter 13 of 18. So that's either that or grinding away in the Fortnite mines.
Nice. I'm probably going to go work on Doom the Dark Age. I'm like halfway through, so I got to keep cranking away at that. Neil?
I'll make dinner in a bit, and if I've got some time, I might keep defending Super Earth.
Nice.
Okay. That sounds good. Maybe I'll join you for one. We'll see.
Cool.
All right, guys. Well, the next time you see me, I will have gone on my little motorcycle road trip, so I'll probably be dead. So no podcast next week. But if we do have a podcast next week, who is who's bringing the movie?
I think it's Neil's turn, right?
No, it's Gid because I brought Death of Stalin.
Didn't I do Alita though? Right, Alita was.
Oh yeah. Well, Sam's on his road trip, and I'm actually not going to be available next week. So
okay,
let's circle back on this.
Okay. Yeah. No worries.
Yeah, awesome. Okay, guys. Well, take it easy. I'll see you guys next week, and we'll figure out what we want to do in the chat.
Sounds good.
See you guys
later, boys. Have a good one.